Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the here, there and everywhere voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Busy man, Matthew, very busy man.
You have been all over the place. So it's been 2 weeks since we were last on air. We've got plenty of catching up to do, plenty of action to cover. But first and foremost, we've got you to cover. Where have you been? What have you been doing?
I mean, I need to hold my hands up, first and foremost. I know we've had hundreds of emails coming in asking where we were. I know you've just been fending them off all week and trying to appease the loyal listener. But yes, we weren't here last week, and that was my fault. I was here, there, and everywhere. I actually should have been in even more places, but one of my flights got cancelled. So let's rewind 10 days or so. So starting from Ipswich v Derby, which was Friday night, 10 days ago or so. Then it was, I think it was Swansea versus Cardiff on the Sunday. I was then due to go to Gothenburg on the Monday, but that got cancelled because I think of the bad weather or something. So I didn't go to that. On the Tuesday, it was then Port Vale versus Ipswich. On the Wednesday, it was Spurs versus Sporting Lisbon. On the Thursday, we had a big goalkeeping event, which I'm sure we'll reference shortly. On the Friday, it was then Czech Republic to go and see Thomas Vasilic. On the Saturday, I then landed back in England and drove to Belgium to watch Club Brugge versus Ostend. And then on the Sunday, I was back to London. So yeah, that kind of sums up my week.
Well, quite the jet setter you've been, my good friend. Although it's funny, I didn't seem to get any messages. Would have been really nice to have gone to a couple of those games, taken a couple of those flights, but you know, it's what it is.
Oh, strange. I'm sure I sent a WhatsApp. I'm sure I did. I'll check. But look, it's one of those things. It's, just miscommunication, lost in translation, lost in the post. I don't know what else we got.
You really do need to speak to your mate Zuckerberg because all his platforms just seem to be failing at the moment. But to be fair, you said there that it's your fault we didn't record last week. It's also mine. I was away too because we've neglected to acknowledge the fact that over the course of the past few weeks, the past month or so, we've both turned 40. So celebrations have ensued. And we were, unavailable last week.
This is true. There's a reason for that, Matthew. I'm not overly delighted at turning 40. Try to keep it as quiet as I could.
You're only as young as you look. And unfortunately for you, well, you
know. Very good, Matthew. Very good. But yes, it was very busy both ends. So we do apologise for not being here last week. But we are here this week. And we did spend a bit of time with a few goalkeeper coaches on Thursday, which was thoroughly enjoyable, although I do feel like the Goalkeepers Union curse has struck again.
Yeah, we're going to be getting on to that, weren't we, a bit later. But hopefully, Emi Martinez is going to be fine, right? He's going to be absolutely fine. He's going to be fully fit and raring to go for the World Cup. Number one, Argentina, with hopes of winning the tournament, of course.
Absolutely, but they won't because England will.
Okay, so you said that people have asked us where the pod was last week. So in a bid, they've also said, can it be a bumper podcast? So in a bid to appease those listeners, I've been furiously scribbling away on my little pad here and trying to come up with some stats just to add a little bit more value to this week's podcast. That's the exciting life I lead. So I've got plenty here. Okay, you can see these bits of paper on the table right now. There we go. Just wave those in the microphone so people can hear them. So throughout the pod, I'm going to be delivering some of these cheeky little nuggets, okay?
Excellent. I was going to ask if they were your notes or your six-year-old brother's, but they're definitely yours, yeah?
They are my... A six-year-old brother. We've just turned 40. So I'm going to have a brother that's 34 years my junior.
Hey, look, it happens.
Okay, so actually I'll give you one of those right now. So would you believe, right, that from the 124 goals scored in total across all four tiers of English football the weekend just gone, 17 goals were scored via rebound. So that's either the goalkeeper parrying the shot or the shot coming back off the woodwork and then the attacker or the opposition player scoring. Now, 17 goals, that might not seem enough. And I ask you this, is that enough? Is that a good percentage? But I just felt when I was watching the action this weekend, there were so many goals going in via rebound.
Fascinating. First and foremost, we've really started this on a real positive note. I'm excited where this is going to go. I mean, that does represent, let me do my math, probably about 15% of goals scored via rebounds. That does sound high to me.
Is that normal? Is it normal?
Well, I mean, look, what is normal, Matthew? I mean, this is going to take us down a completely different road. But another one that I thought, and I don't even know, this might have been one that you're going to produce, but something I don't think is normal is three Premier League goalkeepers to be substituted in the same weekend. I reckon that was also on your list, wasn't it?
Well, that is on my list, but we've gone a little deeper with that one. So that will come just a bit later. Oh, don't you worry, Richard. That is there in fine detail.
Oh, dear. How many have just tuned out? How many of our loyal listeners have just tuned out? But come on, let's crack on, shall we?
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, starting in the Premier League, of course, and at Anfield, where Leeds United came away shock victors by 2-1. And goalkeeping 101 from Ian Melier. Hope you like what I've done there, 101, because that was his 101st appearance for Leeds United. 9 saves, joint top for saves made in a single Premier League game so far this season. He kept Darwin Nunez at bay. He kept Roberto Firmino at bay. He was claiming crosses, meeting through balls. Great to see celebrations when the winner was scored at the end of the game too. What a performance.
Yeah, and you can see exactly what it meant to him when that winning goal went in. There was a lovely angle actually when the camera spun round and showed his reaction to the winning goal. And it's that feeling that we've all had as a goalkeeper at some point. I say we've all had, some of us a little bit more rarely than others, where you know that your performance has made such a difference and you score that last minute goal. For those things to all happen in the same game, it's so rare that it happens, but when it does and you come into the changing room and you know that your part to play was that big, and it really was. He was excellent. He looked bright throughout. A couple of very good one-on-one saves. I thought his distances were very good. I thought when he came out to execute those, I thought he did it in such a way where he spread very, very effectively. Really good save down to his right-hand side as well. I didn't feel like he got enough credit for that, because I think when you actually look at the save in isolation, then yeah, it was not too far from him and he was able to collapse and make the save. But it was actually the footwork prior to that where he's moved across the goal, dropped to his line, and so quick to get down to his right-hand side. The reactions were very good. Wasn't able to hold it. Was very quick to get on the rebound. And yeah, I just thought all afternoon he looked, they use that word a lot, don't they, with goalkeepers, like he looked inspired. He looked like he was enjoying the challenge, enjoying the occasion. And just an incredible result. Something that, I know Liverpool have had a bit of a tough time, but certainly not a result that many people saw coming.
There was some Ian Wright analysis on Match of the Day. We won't go into that too much, but it was just funny because he was praising Melier, but not praising Melier at the same time, wasn't he? He's had a really good game, the lad. But saves you'd expect him to make. There you go. Well, that's a great save. But again, good high for him.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was interesting. I mean, we're going to talk, no doubt, about the Alisson analysis, because it's interesting. The more that you watch a save or the more that you watch a mistake, at some point, you're going to then look at the goalkeeper and try and either create what he could or couldn't do. You know, so I just think with a lot of these saves, they were all excellent saves. The one-on-ones, of course, when you say you're expected to make it, I always think that's difficult to say for a one-on-one because there's so much involved in that save where the decision-making as to whether you drop or whether you approach, at what point you do approach, the technique you use to then make the save, the spread technique that you use. So it does bug me a bit where they'll be like, oh, you'd expect them to make that. Well, no, there's so much that's gone into that technique that you're not discussing. All you're seeing is that final moment where the save is made and, yeah, oh, it just hits him. Well, it just hits him because he's done X, Y, and Z. The same in that save low to his right where they were like, oh, great save, but yeah, you'd expect him to make it. Well, what about everything that's happened prior to that for him to get into that position you know, the decision-making process prior to that, to then get down to his writing, the technique he then uses. That's where the skill is and that's where the expertise is. But more often than not, that gets glossed over and all you actually see is that final moment.
So you mentioned the Alisson goal there too. So there was more analysis in the Sky Sports studio for that first Leeds goal, scored by Rodrigo, assisted by Liverpool's Joe Gomez. So on Twitter, Justin Bryant informed us that Tim Howard, surprisingly, on the US coverage of this game, said that Alisson shouldn't have gone so wide. He then blamed him for slipping. Henry Woodcock said, if you think this is Alisson's fault, you don't understand football. We had a WhatsApp from Phil Hawkins who said, after the first Leeds goal, Alisson was seen gesturing in an apologetic manner to Joe Gomez after the mix-up that led to Rodrigo's goal. Was this him apologising for the slip or apologising for his positioning, as legendary goalkeeping expert Graeme Souness was suggesting? Keen to hear your thoughts. He also says, hope you're enjoying your Euro travels, Mr. Lee, and look forward to hearing your next instalment. But he referenced Graeme Souness there, who at half time with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank and at full time as well, they both said it was 50-50, so that's fair enough. But Souness said in his description of that particular incident that Alisson came almost parallel to the touchline. They did both reference as well the fact that Alisson apologised, which I thought was strange. I felt like he didn't need to do that.
Which I thought was quite big of him, because I didn't think it was his fault. It was just a mix-up. It was as simple as that, where I think he's come to an angle where actually what he's tried to do is help him out. He's realised he's in trouble. And actually, ordinarily, had he been, I think he used his right foot, didn't he, to play the ball back. And that was part of the issue, I think. Had he played it with his left foot, had he have looked, he would have seen that Alisson's tried to make his job easier, thinking, well, imagine that Alisson had stayed in his goal, in the six-yard box. That is such a difficult pass to play it back to where he eventually did actually play it to. So Alisson's thinking, exactly as I would, and I think most goalkeepers would, let me come and help you out. Let me come and get as close as I can to you so you can just set it to me and I can clear it down the line. Of course, Gomez didn't look and played it inside. I think it was just quite big from Alisson to say, look, don't worry about it. I'll take the blame. You know, I thought that was, it was more that than, you know, because if you look at it logically and look at it from a goalkeeping perspective, I wouldn't attach any blame. And the slip's unfortunate. I think even if he doesn't slip, it's going to be tough to get there, because the ball was played literally across the six-yard box. And so, you know, I think from where he was, even if he doesn't slip, I think it still probably would have been a 50-50 at best.
Okay, well, aside from that, some lovely distribution again from Alisson throughout. And actually, inside the opening few minutes, there was a wonderful punt followed by a punt. Melier launched it at one end. Alisson, first time outside of the boot, again, similar to the one we saw in that game with Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, which nearly ended up in a goal, and shows how different the game could have been for Melier had that actually gone in.
Yeah, well, look, we say it so often that as a goalkeeper, you are playing on a knife edge. The difference between a good game and a bad game can be one moment. And as you say, all of a sudden he's come out a hero, and rightly so. But yeah, of course, how often do we see it where that one moment doesn't go your way? And all of a sudden you're seen in a very different light. A nine can easily turn into a three or be flipped upside down and be a six. In fact, it wouldn't even be a six. It would be a three or a four if that happens. I think there was actually an interesting moment as well where then later in the game, brilliant footwork from Alisson, where again, he's taken up a similar position where he's come outside the post, ball played back, good touch, fires it out to the left back. You know, and the, again, it wouldn't really be picked up too much on commentary, but I think the skill involved in that is that kind of thing again that doesn't get you all that much credit from maybe the commentators, but I think goalkeepers watching that, they'd really appreciate the footwork there to get the ball out to the left-hand side.
Okay, over to Old Trafford, where Manchester United beat West Ham by 1-0, and David De Gea was a match winner again for the Red Devils. Kurt Zouma, Mikel Antonio, Declan Rice, all denied some performance from the goalkeeper and lauded by pretty much everyone in the interviews afterwards, and gave one himself, which was stark contrast, if you remember, to that interview we saw him give after the Brentford game on only the second day of the season.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Do you know what it was for me? It was the save he's made at the end. It was the noise. The noise the commentators made. You know when you get that, oh, that just because it was just to get to his left-hand side, the speed. You know, we speak about De Gea a lot, I feel, on this podcast, but of course the big super strength he has, he is so quick, he's so agile, you know, and the saves that he makes, he does make truly world-class saves. And the one, in fact the two in particular I want to talk about, the one to his right where he's kind of clawed it out almost back on his right hand side, full stretch. There was an element of the famous Peter Schmeichel against Newcastle. I've got to drop in Peter Schmeichel's name because I do pretty much every single podcast. Yeah, I could see the look on your face as I was about to say it. You knew where I was going, didn't you?
Well, come on, we've got to have the dinger. Hang on.
Oh, Schmeichel!
There we go. Fine. It's done. But it was. There was an element of that in it where it's that one where you're almost back on yourself and it's the only way in which you can make the save. But how he's got there, the speed at which he's got there, just brilliant. And then the one at the end, top hand to his left hand side. This is vintage De Gea, as far as I'm concerned. It was, again, the speed to get across. So few goalkeepers on the planet, so few people on the planet can get to that ball. If you're taking up a true position and you're having to move your feet as quick as he did and get the spring, the athleticism, the agility, the power, everything in it, it was just a work of art, you know, and to do it at that stage in the game as well. Yeah, and rightly so at the end of the game. I love the fact that so many went over to him. And it's been an interesting week, obviously, a lot made of the fact that he's not even in the 55-man squad for Spain, which is, I mean, look, it is what it is. They've obviously decided they've moved on from him. And there are a lot of top goalkeepers, of course, top Spanish goalkeepers. And he's not deemed to be, you know, that high in the pecking order. But when you see performances like that, that, again, just reminds you of just how good he is. And certainly, I'm sure he feels a little bit hard done by the fact that he's not involved. You do wonder whether that even had a bit of an impact, whether that might have given him that little bit of extra motivation.
It is bonkers, though, right? When you consider David De Gea is, what, the world's highest paid goalkeeper. This is a 55-man provisional squad. It's not like the 23. It's the 55-man provisional for the World Cup that Luis Enrique has named. So you've got the three, right? You've got Unai Simon, David Raya, Robert Sanchez. They are the three likely to go to Qatar. Then you've got Kepa, who's come back into some form for Chelsea, of course, subbed off at the weekend because of injury. And then David Soraya of Getafe. So that's five goalkeepers. Are you telling me that David De Gea is not better than at least one of those goalkeepers?
I mean, this is the thing. I think that when you name it like that, the fact that he is the best paid goalkeeper in the world, that's obviously widely known. He is playing for Manchester United and has been incredibly consistent. He's been consistent in terms of he has been the number one for all this period of time. You think of goalkeepers that do get dropped, and of course there's been moments where maybe he's been close to that, but he has been consistently the number one. He's won player of the season however many times at Man United. It does seem bizarre, but it's something that I guess in England we don't see, because the feeling towards De Gea, I do believe, is different in Spain. And why that is, how that is, I'm not too sure. And certainly in terms of the current manager, it sounds like he's going for a different type of goalkeeper and De Gea doesn't quite fit. But when you look at it in real basic terms, where, you know, what he's done over the past 10 years or so, it does seem crazy that he's not even a backup goalkeeper. But to not be in the top five does seem crazy.
Okay, so to the next sheet of paper, shall we go?
Go on, what have you got for me?
So we saw a goalkeeper substitution in this game, as you referenced at the top of the podcast. That was one of three this weekend. So Kepa, as we just mentioned, replaced by Edouard Mendy in Chelsea's defeat to Brighton. Emi Martinez replaced by Robin Olsen in Aston Villa's defeat to Newcastle. And in this game, Lucas Fabianski was replaced by Alphonse Areola. Now, you received word, didn't you, from our good friend Asmir Begovic about the goalkeeping substitutions, and more so the fact that Lucas Fabianski could have been, or could be, one of the most substituted goalkeepers in the history of the game, right?
Yes.
So, you tasked me.
Go on.
And I did rifle through his 500-odd career appearances, I'll have you know, over the weekend. Again, such an exciting life. I tell you what, people are dying to be in my shoes to look at
these
stats.
I'm sure you had a wedding to go to this weekend as well.
I did. Yeah, I did go to a wedding on Saturday, yeah.
Unbelievable how you squeeze us in. But yes, Asmir did ask the question more than anything, really. Sort of said, he just made the point that he, you know, noticed that there's been one or two times previously that he could remember Fabianski coming off, obviously earlier this season as well. So he did pose the question, whether it's him or whether it might be someone else. Now, that's probably quite a lot to ask for you to trawl through every goalkeeper on the planet to find out if more have been substituted. But maybe you have. I don't know what extent you went to.
No, that is practically impossible. Would have taken me years, unless I work at Opta, which I'm sure you just type in a few things and it pops up. You can't do that. For me, it was scrolling through every single game. So I did go through the 500-odd career appearances, as I said. How many times do you think that Lucas Fabianski has either been subbed on or subbed off in his career? This is both at club level and international level.
Let me think this through. 500. So I'd say ordinarily, you're probably talking one every 100 games. Is that about the ratio, would you say? Let's go slightly higher than that. So rather than say five, I'm going to go seven.
Okay. Well, if you double that, you will get the number of times that Lukas Fabianski has either been subbed on or subbed off. So I'm going to quickly rattle through them now. I've done the research, so I feel like I need to, in Martin Tyler fashion, actually give people the research that I've done. So, okay, let's go through this. I've got my piece of paper. All right. So starting with Arsenal in May 2008, he was substituted off for Jens Lehmann in that game. They beat Everton 1-0 in November 2008 against Manchester United, a 2-1 win. He was substituted on for Manuel Almunia in April 2009 against Villarreal in the Champions League. He was also substituted on again for Almunia in a 1-1 draw. And 2 years later, in December 2011, he was substituted off for Vito Mannoni in a 3-1 loss. And in February 2014, so he had a three-year break, he was substituted on against Bayern Munich for Wojciech Szczesny, who received a red card. We then go to his time with Swansea. In December 2014, he was substituted off against West Ham. That was for Gerhard Tremel because he had been red carded. 3-1 loss there. A four-year break. June 2018, a 2-2 draw for Poland with Chile. He was substituted on for Wojciech Szczesny and again for Szczesny in that sequence of games, I imagine, for Poland, this time against Lithuania, a 4-0 win. We then go to his time with West Ham in September of 2019, a 2-2 draw with Bournemouth. He was substituted off for Roberto. If you remember Roberto and that ill-fated spell for West Ham, that was what started that, the 2 months that he spent in goal there and was never to be seen again in the Premier League. January 2020 for West Ham, a 1-0 loss to Sheffield United. He was substituted off for David Martin and again substituted off for Nathan Trott in a 4-0 win over Doncaster in January 2021. And in October 2021 for Poland, he was substituted off for Radoslav Majewski in a 5-0 win over San Marino. And then, of course, this season in August, substituted off for Alphonse Areola in a 2-0 loss against City, and the weekend again for Areola against Manchester United.
There you go. And I'm so glad you read them all out. That was truly fascinating.
I'm exhausted after that.
I'm not surprised. 14, that is a lot, though. That is a lot. That's actually, and no, thank you, Asmir, for asking the question, I guess, because there you go. You've sent Matthew down one heck of a path. I want to know how many hours you actually spent looking that up.
Well, there you go. That's the mystery around that. But three goalkeeping substitutions, right? Kepa, Emi Martinez, and Fabianski. And also, if you were to go north of the border in the Scottish Championship this weekend, Mark Ridgers was subbed off at half-time for Inverness Caledonian Thistle. They were 3-0 down to Greenock Morton. Billy Dodds, the manager, the Inverness Cali manager, did say after the game it wasn't injury. He just hauled him off. It was an opportunity for Cali Thistle to go top. They blew that against Greenock Morton. At half-time, he was dragged, but not because of injury. So that's another one, isn't it? I'm not going to go deep into that, but I then thought about goalkeepers who have been dragged without being injured. Wes Fodderingham, we've mentioned before. We've spoken to Paul Rahubka, if you remember that game for Leeds. I think it was, wasn't it, against Blackpool. Are there any other goalkeepers that listeners can remember that have been taken off without injury? Or are there any other goalkeepers who have been subbed on or off more so than Lukas Fabianski? Let us know. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net, 07503673020, or on Twitter at GK Union. But sometimes, Richard, there are weekends where trends occur, and this is one of them.
It really is. I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember three in the same weekend. I think that has to be some sort of, given that, again, I gave that ratio earlier. I might be miles off with it, by the way, but if I were to sort of guess that it's once every 100 games that you'd be substituted, which I'm just thinking my career, I mean, I only played a couple of hundred games, but I think I came off twice, I think. One was a broken cheek and one was a dislocated shoulder. So those were the two times that I came off. And it's so rare, like you say, substitutions are goal. I still find that the whole Rahubka one, you know, it's so rare and it's quite harsh. You know, normally managers will stick with a goalkeeper for the second half and try and give them that little bit of belief if they can to go on and finish the game and hopefully go into the next game positively. So it is so rare that you see that. But, and again, it's something I don't particularly like. But at the same time, some would argue, why don't you see more of it? You know, if a player's having a bad game, you would take them off. If a goalkeeper's having a bad game, you would take them off. But you just don't seem to see that with goalkeepers. And I do think because of the nature of the position, there is a real difference there.
How did you not get dragged in that 6-6? Crikey, beggars belief.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. This pod has taken a real downturn.
Lastly, before we move on, Nathan Bishop on the bench for Manchester United at the weekend. First time this season, I think only the second time in his United career.
Yeah, great for him. I mean, he was one that, and there was a lot of rumours, certainly I saw a lot of articles in the summer where I know there was a loan or two lined up, and United decided against that in the end. And again, you're seeing this more and more with the top clubs. They want to have four top goalkeepers in the building, which, whether that's good or bad for Nathan Bishop, I think it's one of them where to be involved in a first team environment like that, there is a real positive to it. But of course, the game time that he got last season, and no doubt would have wanted to continue this season, he's not able to get. But then experiences like that, to sit on the bench in a Premier League game, a big game as well, and obviously a huge team in Manchester United, that experience in itself will obviously be very worthwhile.
Okay, the King Power, Leicester nil, Manchester City 1. And good to hear Danny Ward handed some positive chat for a change. It was literally every time he touched the ball in this game. Amazing how that narrative swings, isn't it? And more than 300 minutes without conceding a goal. And it was all about how he'd got himself back on track. But really good to hear him just have some positive reviews from pundits and the commentators. He did eventually concede from Kevin De Bruyne. What a free kick that was. A nice touch with the two of them at the end, I thought.
Yeah, no, it was. And no, it is nice to see and nice to hear. I think that, look, one of the big things for me, I think Brendan Rodgers needs credit for this, where I know there were a few people calling for a change. Obviously, they've obviously got Iverson on the bench, who's had a really good few seasons in the Championship. So I'm sure there might have been a point where that was a consideration. But I think you often see this when a two goes to a one. And we've definitely spoke about this before, but there is a complete shift in mentality to go from a two to a one, and it doesn't always just happen. So if you are the manager and you know that you've got a goalkeeper that's got immense quality and you do believe they're more than good enough to be a number one, sometimes you have to just show that faith and you almost have to accept that there might be a few mistakes on the road to them becoming that number one. But it certainly seems like he is growing in confidence. And I almost don't want to use that term, growing in confidence. I think it's more a case of just becoming used to being a number one again, because it has been so long for him. Kasper Schmeichel obviously kept that place for so, so long. And very rarely did he get a chance to show what he could do. Well, now, you know, all of a sudden you're thrown in at the deep end and you do have to play week in, week out. The pressures that come with it, the highs, the lows, the criticism, etc. And he does. His body language certainly looks that little bit better. There were some good moments in this game. Took a really good cross, actually, in particular. And as you say, the goal, absolutely no chance. What a free kick that is. And they did have a very nice embrace at the end.
They did. And he made a few saves, as you mentioned, but trumped in that game by Edison with a corker of a stop from Yuri Tielemans onto the bar, volley from a corner. What a save that was.
Do you know what made this so good was the fact that it was so unexpected, and the ball flight being what it was. That was what it was for me, because I just think that, yeah, look, you get shots from the edge of the box all the time, and you know, you look at it logically, you could say, well, he's 30 yards out and it's a volley and it's above his head. But no, when the ball's travelling like that with topspin and you're not expecting it and it's through bodies, to then react in the way that he did and get a hand to it and put it over the bar, yeah, it was a fantastic save.
We're going to try and cover some of the stuff we missed over the past week when we didn't record, but the pod would be about 2 hours long and no one wants that. So we'll just touch on a few things. And one of those things was the assist from Edison the week prior against Brighton for Erling Haaland. I mean, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, incredible. I've watched it so many times. Obviously the distance that you get, it's just the speed at which the ball moves. It's a shot, you know, it's a shot that's travelled 70 yards pinpoint, and it is absolutely pinpoint, you know, where it's in between the defender, Sanchez, allows Haaland to run onto it. And in the end, you know, he obviously muscles his way there, and in the end, reasonably simple finish. But yeah, just, again, we've referenced this a lot in terms of striking a football, but the raw power that he has, you know, that's the one where you've got a lot of goalkeepers that are very accurate and can maybe find fullbacks, little clips to the wingers, etc. But to have that one where you can every now and then just put it over the top, which he does every now and then. We've seen so many assists where he does this, where all of a sudden out of nowhere, he strikes at 70 yards and seemingly it gets there in seconds. And it was, yeah, right in the path for Haaland. In the end, quite a simple finish.
I think the aspect of this that I love the most is just the boom. The boom that reverberates around the Etihad when Edison delivers one of these passes. You can just feel it in the ground. Absolutely love that. But moving over to Craven Cottage, Fulham 0, Everton 0, and Jordan Pickford with two tips over from Willian and Alexander Mitrovic. Classic Pickford saves, I thought these. Although that first one with Willian, it looked like he changed his mind didn't it, from right hand to left hand.
Yeah, it was, yeah, and a brilliant, brilliant save. When you watch it in super slow motion, it does look like he's almost going to go with his left, then realises it makes more sense to go top hand, which he does. But the speed of reaction's phenomenal. And the second save, again, I feel like the second save probably deserves a bit more credit. I mean, it may be hitting the bar, but even the fact that it may be hitting the bar, the spring that he's got to get up into the top corner, the speed to get across, two steps, explosion, and then to get a top hand to it where it might not even be going in. Like, you know, you can't underestimate just how powerful and just how difficult that is. And that for me was, yeah, both of them very special saves, both very different saves, as you say, very trademark Pickford. Certainly that second one, you know, again, one of the biggest strengths he has is that explosive power, and he certainly showed it in abundance with that second save.
And lastly, Bournemouth 2, Tottenham 3. Mark Travers now in for a few games. It looks like Neto's going to be out until the new year.
Yeah, so it's certainly an opportunity for him to re-establish himself. I know a lot felt that it was a little bit harsh that he came out of the team in the first place, you know, certainly after getting them promoted. And I know we've made the point that the three championship teams that got promoted, none of the three goalkeepers that were playing at the time are now the established first choice goalkeepers in the Premier League, which is a shame. But Neto has come in and done very well, and certainly a tough moment for Travers in this one, which again, you can't help but feel that often this happens with a lack of game time, you know, where he just hasn't picked up the flight of the cross. It may have changed its direction slightly. Sometimes it happens where the cross comes in and maybe your eyes don't quite pick it up, or you think it's going to whip in a little bit more than it does, but you can see he just doesn't quite pick up the flight. And in the end, he then tries to react, knowing that it's too late. He just couldn't quite get to where he needed to get to. But at that point, obviously, was too late and it was a free header. So one that he'll be a little bit disappointed with. But again, can't help but this is the kind of mistake that you do often see where you haven't been that regular number one.
Just a couple of WhatsApps we've had in to finish off the Premier League. The first one is from Buster in Nottingham. He's a coach for BGKT Coaching. He said, not saying that anything Dean Henderson has done at his time at Forest has been bad, but with Brice Samba doing so well out in France and last season, have Forest made the wrong decision in replacing him?
Again, it's tough. Probably goes back to the point I've just made there about Mark Travers. You know, he's now not played a game of football near enough for a year. So it's difficult because I think, you know, you think of how much momentum Dean Henderson had when he was at Sheffield United and seemingly could do no wrong. And there have been some top moments for him already, but he is in a team that are struggling a bit. And again, there's not really any or many goals that you can look at and say, ah, you know, that definitely could have been or should have been a save. There may well have been a few that you look at and think, oh, maybe on another day. So I feel like he will get stronger and stronger as the season progresses. I think that they're two very, very different goalkeepers, Brice Samba and Dean Henderson, I'd argue. So there is a bit of a transition there. Whether they made a mistake or not, I think a lot of that, from what I understand, may well have been taken out of their hands. You know, it wasn't quite as simple as them deciding to choose Dean Henderson over Brice Samba. But certainly, I think it's always difficult when you've got a real crowd favourite, which Brice Samba was, and you know, we've referenced so many different goalkeepers on this podcast when they leave and then goalkeepers stepping in and having to fill the shoes, it can be tough. And certainly, you know, for Brice Samba leaving Forest in the moment that he did on promotion, you know, such a strong end to the season, you essentially leave the club as a club legend. And people will always look back and be like, oh, how good he was. But there were times when they did question him. You know, I do remember that as well, where he came out of the team from memory once or twice, you know, where the performances maybe weren't quite there or people questioned certain things, maybe about his character, etc. So I think we need to be a little bit careful that he did finish the season really strongly. He did prove himself to be a really top player in the big moments. And I'm sure if he was in the Premier League, we'd be talking very positively about him. But at the same time, it wasn't all plain sailing. And I think for Dean Henderson, he will continue to get stronger as the season progresses, in the same way that I think Forrest will as well, in that they have had a tough start to the season. But again, we know how quickly it can change.
We should also flag here the seven saves that Henderson made against Liverpool last week in the crowd at the end, celebrating a great start to the season for him. Shipping a lot of goals now, as you said, but more to do with the unit as a whole as opposed to Henderson. And Samba, it seemed like you've just mentioned it there. He wanted to go back home. He wanted to go to France and handed what appeared to be quite a bumper contract by Lens too. But over to another WhatsApp, Phil Hawkins, who we referenced earlier in the pod, also sent another WhatsApp to us at the same time where he said, not a question, but a shout out for a crazy stat that I couldn't help but notice you missed. over a recent podcast. The shutout for Nick Pope at Manchester United was his 50th clean sheet in 150 Premier League games. Now, considering he's played the majority of his Premier League football with a team in the lower third of the division, including a relegation season, can we recognise that a 1-in-3 shutout ratio is absolutely ridiculous and deserves more credit for his talents? Now, when Phil sent this, it was 50 in 150. There's been three more games since then. It's now 52 in 153.
Yeah, phenomenal. No, and, you know, I can only blame my co-host for missing that, because that's essentially his job, is what he's paid for. So, Phil, we are sorry. I will be, and we will have words after this. It's very, very disappointing. But, yeah, the... No, as a ratio, you're right. Absolutely incredible. Look, it's incredible, if, like you say, if you're in the top six and you're doing 1-in-3, I think that you're getting a lot of love for that. But as mentioned, the fact that Burnley have been in the bottom half more often than not, I can't say anything other than that, that it's very good. And look, he's instantly made himself a fan's favourite at Newcastle, continuing to keep arguably an even higher level that he's had in previous seasons. So, yeah, there's not much but positivity from our end, Matthew, is there?
It is the EFL overview, and John Ruddy was the hero for Birmingham in a big win over QPR. Penalty save from Lyndon Dykes, 5 points off the playoffs now, 6 points from the drop zone. What a league the Championship is. And Adam Davies helping Sheffield United end a torrid run of six games without a win. The Blades comfortably beating West Brom at the Hawthorns. Three games for him now, deputising for Wes Fodderingham. A penalty save in that draw with Norwich too.
Yeah, it's certainly been an eventful few games for Adam. But no, delighted for him, because it was he's had to bide his time. Again, I feel like that might be the theme of this pod. Goalkeepers that aren't playing regularly that get their opportunity. But no, certainly to have the three games he's had, it'll be interesting to see what they do for the next game, whether they stick with him or whether Wes Fodderingham comes back in. But I think regardless, he's really justified the faith that Sheffield United showed in bringing him into the mix. Three very solid performances, and even to the point where, and again, we didn't speak about this because it would have been in last week's pod, but he had the mistake early in the game against Norwich, but just showed the character to then bounce back, make several saves, including the penalty save, you know, which I know we really do labour on quite a lot. To have that mentality to bounce back from tough moments, that's certainly something that he's got in abundance. And yeah, John Ruddy has to have a mention. Big penalty save. Birmingham, I think it's fair to say, going above and beyond this season. You know, a lot of people, and certainly a club that is still having difficulties, but I do feel that John Ruddy's had a massive part to play in where they are now. You know, to have that sort of an influence behind you, still playing to the level that he is, and showing it week in, week out. You know, we've referenced so many of his saves on his podcast. A massive well done to him.
In League One, on loan at Port Vale, Jack Stevens fantastically thwarting on loan at Lincoln, Jordan Garrick, in a one-on-one scenario. The Valiants winning 1-0 there. Connor Ripley continuing to enjoy regular first-team football at Morecambe. Two good saves in the win over Barnsley last week, and keeping Wickham out in a 1-1 draw at Adams Park this week. Fleetwood's Jay Lynch determined to keep it clean against Accrington debutant Leslie Adekoya denied a certain goal had it not been, I think for Lynch somehow diverting his shot onto the bar. And Jamie jousting with James in a goalless draw between Cheltenham and MK Dons, coming cunningly tipping over from Ole Yinka. And another James, this time Belshaw, with two incredible saves at Hillsborough around this time last week. A draw for Rovers against Wednesday.
Yeah, I wanted to reference that one in particular. I thought the two saves from Belshaw were world class. Certainly the second one as well, right at the end of the game, to get a big hand and tip it over the bar in the way that he did. Very, very good. Jack Stevens, as you mentioned, carries on his good form at Port Vale. I know that they've really taken to him there. He had to miss a game with a dead leg, but came back very strong. Good performance, another clean sheet. Jamie Cumming, top save this was. Good footwork up in the top corner. Not an easy save. Bit of a tough time for MK at the moment, but maybe just look like they're turning a bit of a corner, and certainly he'll have a big part to play in that. The other thing I wanted to reference, and you might be coming on to this, was the Carl Rushworth throw.
Yeah, airmail from Rushworth.
I mean, I've seen this, and I don't know how this hasn't gone viral. Or maybe it has, because I had to watch it again. I assumed it was... Well, it's gone further than I could kick the ball. It's gone about 60 yards. And, yeah, just an unbelievable bit of distribution, and something we don't see as much now, that big. I remember I played with Espen Bardsson back in the day, for those that remember him, the ex-Tottenham goalkeeper, 6'6" he was. He came to Watford, and he preferred to just throw it all the time. He didn't actually... like do a volley out of his hands or kick it off the floor. He would, if he had the ball in his hands to like get play going again, he would just launch a big throw into their half, and he just did it over and over. So just preferred to throw it than kick it.
I love a throw. Love it. Matt Murray was a really good thrower of the ball, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Espen Bardsson, isn't he like super intelligent now? Isn't he in something like soliciting?
Yeah, he always was super intelligent. That didn't just happen when he retired from football. But he's, yeah, he was, I want to say he was involved. I still meet him from time to time. I haven't met for a couple of years, actually. We are overdue a coffee and a catch up. But he's, yeah, involved in the financial industry, hedge funds, things like that. So yeah, he's super, super intelligent. It was a true story that we, when they were kind of like freezing him out of Watford, which is all a bit harsh, but it kind of allowed it allowed me to get my chance, because for whatever reason they decided that he was surplus to requirements. I remember we had a Hart Senior Cup game against Tring Town, and they've decided to put Espen Bardsson on the bench, which I'm sure everyone can appreciate is a little bit of a kick in the teeth for a goalkeeper of his caliber to come to Tring Town and sit on the bench. But the story goes that he was sat there, he was reading the Financial Times the entire game. So it was a little bit of, obviously, and I look at it now, and at the time, you know, people were like, oh, that's out of order, it's disrespectful. I was thinking, no, actually, it's the other way around. It's disrespectful to ask him to come and sit on the bench at Tring Town. So, yeah, he sat there and read the Financial Times.
I bet you guys had some short conversations in the canteen, didn't you?
Yeah, I found him fascinating. He was such an interesting character, and he even made a really brief comeback, kind of like retired, and then all of a sudden made a brief comeback for Everton, if I remember rightly, and suddenly played a Premier League game like a year later against Spurs. Might have been a 4-4 draw or something like that.
Did he?
Yeah, really random. Well, there you go. Well, you wouldn't remember, because apparently your research is not quite what it used to be.
We've got one more, by the way, to come. So a quick word before we move on to League Two. Will Mannion and Harry Lee, a run against Mannion at Cambridge following Dimitar Mitov's injury, played really well in the first of those against Port Vale, beat Wickham last midweek, but a derby defeat at Peterborough on Saturday. At this juncture, we should quickly mention Lucas Bergstrom here too. A big one-on-one save in that win for Posh, and wonderful improv to boot a ball away in the win over Accrington last midweek too. And Harry Lee making his pro debut for Exeter, just 17, replacing Jamal Blackman in last midweek's draw at Derby. A clean sheet too.
Yeah, massive shout out to Harry Lee. I know there's a lot being spoke about in regards to him. So massive well done to him. Certainly one to keep an eye on. And I just wanted to reference Will Mannion as well, because he's obviously had to wait a long time. I say a long time. He's had a bit of an unusual career. Obviously, Wimbledon, Hull City, went abroad, now at Cambridge. And of course, this injury to Dimitar Mitov will give him an extended run in the team. And certainly the way that he's started, it'll be very interesting to see how he does, because he's obviously a very good size, moves well. Some of the saves I've seen him make already, it looks like a very interesting goalkeeper. Certainly one to keep an eye on.
And in League Two, where there has been hokey-cokey keepers at Colchester this season, Matt Bloomfield has come in and gone with Sam Hornby. Good performances from him against Newport and Colchester. Harry Lewis, very much the number one at Bradford, ever present this term. 3 successive draws for the Bantams and 3 very good saves from him in that run. And can we have the goalkeeper assist klaxon, please? Nick Zanev setting up Josh Davison for what proved to be the winner for AFC Wimbledon against Harrogate. Also tipping over from Luke Armstrong's header late on.
Yeah, and that was the save in particular that I wanted to speak about. I thought, not the save actually, it was more the assist. Lovely ball downfield. I know sometimes when we have the klaxon, I do question just how much it's deserved. Maybe that's fair, where it can just sometimes be a regular punt and all of a sudden it turns into an assist. Whereas actually this was a lovely pass, you know, lovely bit of distribution. Found his man, great finish. And then to make the save late on, it's a very good save to tip it over the bar, good footwork. And that's always quite nice when you win a game, you've had an assist, you made a decent save. That is kind of one of those games where you go back into the change room afterwards and you're feeling quite happy with yourself.
Hey.
Clean Sheet Club. Yep, we're at that point of the show. It is Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League. Edison, Acai, Easy Peasy, Vicente Guaita, Eagle-Eyed, Nick Pope, Toast of the Tune, Burnt Leno, No Toast Burnt Here, Jordan Pickford, successive shutouts for the first time since May 2021, David De Gea, 5-6, Aaron Ramsdale, happy chappy. Into the Championship, John Ruddy, as cool as ice, Adam Davis on the board, Ryan Alsop milling the millers, Lee Nichols back-to-back, Thomas Kaminski, 4 wins and 2 cleans, Dan Backman, 2 on the trot. In League One, Brad Collins bookending the month, Luke Southwood heading north, Jamie Cumming ditto, Jay Lynch local lad, Lucas Bergstrom keeping out Cambridge, and Jack Stevens slipping out from the back. In League Two, Paul Farman third time for successive shutouts, Jonathan Mitchell third of the entire campaign, Lawrence Vigouroux on for a record, Ben Hinchcliffe returning to the fold with a hat-trick, Thomas Holy 6'9" and in his prime, Owen Evans leasy peasy.
Good stuff, Richard. Over to the table where we do technically have a new leader.
A new leader, really? That's bearing in mind that Freddie Woodman got off to such a quick start. I kind of felt like we'd be well into, or certainly a lot closer to Christmas before he was really challenged. But okay, go on, hit me with it.
Yes, so now joining Freddie Woodman at the top with 10 clean sheets so far this season, but doing it in 16 games, so 2 games less than Freddie Woodman, is Lawrence Vigouroux for Leyton Orient. A very good season. What might be a record-breaking season for him on a personal level. 10 clean sheets in 16 games. And then just below those two, we have Ross Doohan and David Stockdale with 8 clean sheets apiece. Doohan on 16 and Stockdale in 17.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, Richard, that's it for what has been a relatively bumper podcast, I think you can say. Just some quirky bits and pieces to finish off the pod. Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, we should mention, he's now entered the history books as the first goalkeeper to keep 10 clean sheets in the first 12 matches of a season this century for Barcelona. Quite impressive that. He's averaged 0.33 goals per game in La Liga, which is, again, stark contrast to the Champions League, where he's conceded 10 and Barcelona were dumped out. Funny how the league and the European campaign has differed.
Yeah, that is phenomenal, though. 10 and 12. Just thinking that through now. Has he only conceded 2 goals then, do you know?
Yeah.
Has he just conceded
single goal in each? He's conceded against Sociedad and... You got me. You've done me again. Do you know what? I nearly looked this up and I thought, he won't ask me this.
But there you go. This has been... I mean, bearing in mind, you have produced some very interesting stats this show. But I do feel like there's one or two places we've just caught you out.
You have. I'm going to tell you now. Sociedad, away from home, they won 4-1 and he conceded 1. And then the other game... Yeah, can't tell you.
I love that you're talking really slowly so that you're researching it as we're talking. But anyway, the point being, yeah, look, I just made the point about Lawrence Vigouroux, was it 9 in 16 or whatever it is, which is, yeah, it's nearly 1 every 2 games, which is phenomenal. But if it is 2 or 3 goals or whatever it might be in 12 games, that's, yeah, it's unheard of. Very good.
Madrid, 3-1, if you're asking. Okay, on to the Yashin Trophy. Now, I can't remember if this was before or after the last time we recorded, but we've got to mention it. Thibaut Courtois named FIFA's best goalkeeper at the Ballon d'Or ceremony. So he was number 1 of 10. It went in descending order: Lloris, Bounou, Oblak, Neuer, Trapp, Maignan, Mendy, Edison, Alisson and Courtois. Even though he won it in true Courtois fashion, he still had some words to say about the fact that he was voted 7th best overall player. Of course, the Ballon d'Or normally going to an outfield player. That's why they created the Yashin Trophy. He received 82 votes for the Ballon d'Or compared to Karim Benzema, the winner, who received 549. Now, in an interview with L'Equipe, Courtois said the following, which I thought was pretty good. He said, without a good goalkeeper, you don't win a trophy. And in football awards, sometimes we forget that. People vote faster for a striker who scores goals than by a goalkeeper. Too bad. But we will continue to show that goalkeepers are really important. Last year, if we won the Champions League, it wasn't just thanks to Vinicius, to Valverde, to Benzema, or to Rodrigo. It was also thanks to Courtois. The modern goalkeeper is no longer alone to save goals. Here in Madrid, I also have to start the plays. It is I who, with the first pass, will decide how we are going to mount the attack or how we are going to get out of the rival's pressure. Today, you are almost a playmaker. Goalkeepers are much more important than you think.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think that's well said. I mean, it's one that, yeah, the Ballon d'Or. Bearing in mind, and we've said this so many times in this pod, we're effectively playing a different sport to the rest of the players. So, and he is spot on. It's kind of, I guess it's nice that goalkeepers are involved in that trophy, but will they ever win one in our lifetime? Probably not. I mean, I can't think what season you must have to actually win the Ballon d'Or as a goalkeeper. I think it's almost impossible, even if you win every trophy under the sun. And save penalty shoot. That it would have to be that, actually. It would be like major finals, several major finals, probably penalty shootout wins to get the vote of the people in order to be number one. I think it's nigh on impossible. But no, massive well done to him and certainly well deserved. An interesting list, that top 10 that you named. Obviously, Alisson Edison as well, I think very rightly up there in terms of that top 10. But I would argue that Courtois has just edged it this season.
And some movers and shakers in the world of goalkeeper coaching, Richard. Nick Colgan is in at Stockport County. That's due to Shwan Jalal going and rejoining Eddie Howe over at Newcastle. They work together at Bournemouth, of course. Tommy Lee is now the lead academy goalkeeper coach at Manchester United. And Neil Cutler is on his way out of Aston Villa. That is quite a remarkable shake-up there. It looks like Javi Garcia is going to be brought in by Unai Emery. They've worked together numerous times before. And of course, he's actually worked with Emi Martinez during their time at Arsenal together.
Yeah, look, it's one of my biggest frustrations in regards to goalkeeper coaching, in that it often you are dictated to by how the manager does. And it's one of my biggest frustrations, because you could go in, do a phenomenal job as a goalkeeper coach. You could bring through the youth, you could work with the first choice and get the best out of them and so on and so forth. And yet the manager goes, and if the new manager comes in, wants to bring his own staff to surround him, then often you will be the one that then loses out and has to move on. And I just think it's so frustrating, in that then your success doesn't necessarily lead to, being a goalkeeper coach in the Premier League or at the very top. You know, it is often a case of, if you are associated with a manager and they have success, then potentially you can travel with them. And I think, you know, certainly in Neil Cutler's case, I think most people in the goalkeeping world are of the thought and agree in that, you know, he's very much one of the elite, you know, probably top three, top four in the world, you would argue. Certainly in the UK, he's one of the very best. So for him to then be moved on, I've got no doubt he'll be out of a job for minutes, because there'll be a lot of people that are courting him. But yeah, just another example of how it almost doesn't matter at times just how well you do.
Yeah, bonkers. No slight on Garcia, but that is a monumental loss for Aston Villa, I think. And Emi Martinez has already come out on social media and spoken of his admiration for a man who has hugely developed his game. Let's go over to some funny comments made by Callum Wilson. This was on the Footballers Football podcast, and it was regarding a game between Newcastle and Brighton earlier on in the campaign, where he said, this is an incident that has occurred with Robert Sanchez. Callum Wilson, I'll read this out to you. He said, it's true. It was too funny. It's not a regular thing. I don't go looking for the goalkeeper's water bottle. So they're playing away at Brighton, and he has gone and tucked into refreshments that were in the net of Robert Sanchez's goal. So it was down at Brighton away. He said it was boiling hot, must have been 30-odd degrees at pitch side. The ball's gone out for a corner, but it's gone into the crowd, so it's taken a while. I needed a drink. I was parched. So I saw the goalkeeper's Lucozade, so I started drinking it. It's nice, you know, refreshing. Then the goalie turned around and looked at me as if to say, big man, put my drink down. I was looking at him, squirting it away, and then shook it and threw it. I was just doing it for banter.
I'll be fuming. Like, how? I would be absolutely fuming. Like, how dare you? You don't just... It's like going out for dinner with someone and then all of a sudden they start eating off your plate. Although I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, they probably have that experience with their better half. But yeah, it's like that. It's like, this is mine. What's wrong with you?
He then said, that one occasion I squeezed it away fully as it was boiling hot, and I thought, if he ain't got a drink, he ain't going to be saving shots. Let's dehydrate him. It's about being game smart.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, look, at least he's honest, I guess. But yeah, I would have been absolutely... I was always a bit of a geek as well with my water bottle. So I used to have a little concoction that I put together, which was like an amount of Red Bull mixed in with water. So it was kind of, I didn't want to do just pure Red Bull during the game, but my thinking was I would just every now and then, and I kind of, people picked up on it, that I would go for a drink like every opportunity I could. And I'd just have a little sip, like a tiny sip, but just to keep my levels quite high of whatever there is in Red Bull. I mean, yeah, probably wasn't great for me or my stomach, but yeah, just to keep those caffeine levels high.
Red Bull during a game?
Yeah.
That surprises me. Is that common? Do other goalkeepers do that?
Red Bull before games, yeah, massively common. I think during the game, probably not. But then my thinking was, well, look, I just want to keep like microdose. I think that's the term, isn't it? Where if I just keep the level at very, very high. So if I'm just having a sip every 5 minutes, I'm just getting a little bit more in all the time. And then I would ultimately crash after the game and be in a very depressed state.
Most games then that you were in a depressed state. Okay, to finish. Now we've had the assists. We've had a goal too. Now this was lovely to see. This was on Sunday night, I think, or maybe even last night. Can't remember the day now. But Alex Bass, the Sunderland goalkeeper, was playing for the under-21 side and bagged a goal in a last-gasp draw at rivals Newcastle. Love to see this. He leapt like an absolute salmon. Mm. It was from a corner, off the post. And how many times do we bemoan the fact that goals go in off the post via the goalkeeper? This time it's via the goalkeeper, but at a different end. He's actually scored as a result. Interestingly, said after the game, handballed it. Didn't think it would be given, but there you go.
But he's made himself an instant hero. I mean, yeah, who would have known that a game like that could produce a moment like this? But no, it was, do you know what, when you see the footage, he attacks it really, really well. And you actually think about this, and I know we've had various thoughts on this podcast. I know there was a conversation we had recently where there was, a certain manager or pundit didn't feel that goalkeepers should come up for corners. But again, think about it logically. Ordinarily, a goalkeeper has better spring and is taller than other players on the pitch. It's what we do. It's the plyometric training. And again, a lot of goalkeepers are 6'3", 6'4" plus. So to bring someone of that size up into the area as an additional person, like, of course it makes sense. Yeah, of course there's a risk of losing a goal, but if you're losing the game anyway, who cares? So why wouldn't you do that? And in fairness, this is a great example where he is. Look, he's a good size. He's come up, really used his size well, attacks the ball really well. And it is a good header. Well, handball, apparently. But again, you couldn't really see that on the video that I saw.
No, you'll take it. What was funny about that clip as well is the Sunderland fans who were in ecstasy and raptures after that goal has gone in, they're still tucked away right up at the top at St James's Park. I get that's where the away fans are, but in a game like this where it's, what, three quarters empty, they're still all the way up in the cards.
I love that. But they'll have done that on purpose, especially given that it's Sunderland. That would have been even more so that they put them up there.
Right. Okay, Rich. Oh, no, it's not. It's not that we're not done. Well, I've got my final bit of paper. Of course. Okay. How could I forget? Right. Finally, just before we go. So we're pretty much at the halfway point now before the World Cup commences in a couple of weeks' time. But from the 92 teams from the Premier League to League Two, how many goalkeepers have been used so far this season? So the number of goalkeepers in total.
This is quite a good one. Please don't tell me, like earlier in the podcast, you're then going to name all of them. Wouldn't surprise me. I was kind of expecting something. Do you want to hear the 800 goals that Ronaldo scored? I'm going to name every goalkeeper. No, I'm going to go, right, so 92. Do you know what? Because ordinarily, you'd probably say like 110, 120, but I'm going to go a bit higher. I'm going to go 135.
Wow. Wow. You are so close.
Go on.
It's 137.
Wow. So that is, and do you know why? I just did a little bit of, this is my mathematician coming in, a little bit of basic maths. I thought, well, I reckon in each league, half of the teams have had a second goalkeeper play. But that's amazing. That's surely higher than normal.
Yeah, we did this last season. I'll have to try and dig that out because it was pretty high last season, I think. So the split, 26 goalkeepers used in the Prem, 39 in the Championship, 38 in League One, and 34 in League Two. So that's what? So from 92 teams, 137, that's 45 changes, is it?
So it is literally, which is 45, is just very, yeah, marginally under half, which I'm sure at this stage, you know, essentially we're, what is it, November 1st today. So we're not even halfway through the season. We're a couple of months into it. That does seem really high to me. And I do, I've made this point to a lot of people recently where I feel like dropping goalkeepers or changing goalkeepers this season does appear to be higher than before. And again, without having the stats to back it up, just from what I'm seeing, it seems like it'll be, you know, one or two mistakes and a goalkeeper's coming out of the team, where previously it always felt like that mentality of, if you had a number one, you really backed them and gave them a really good run in the team, and it was often something quite drastic before they got dropped. But it does seem like it is that little bit quicker now.
Okay, Richard, there are games this week, of course. We'll be back this time next week as we conclude the first half of the English football season. We will be back as well during the World Cup for some World Cup specials too. Asmir Begovic hopefully joining us. But yeah, I need to go and get some sleep and a life, it seems.
Mm. I mean, look, Matthew, I certainly appreciate the research that you've done this week. Although I'm really happy as well that I caught you out on one or two things. Do look up Espen Bardsson and you will see that game I was talking about.
I will indeed. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.